Guilt. Only a good person feels guilt. It is important to make a distinction between true guilt and false guilt. When we are muddy with this, we are left twirling in circles. Let's look at three different strategies of how we can approach and deal with guilt. Here's how. Number one. Turn shame to guilt. Self-knowledge is not always immediately good news. It may lead us to face what we typically avoid. Shame is hiding. Guilt is conscience. Let your conscience be a voice to which you pay attention to. Guilt can be a useful seeking to make amends signal. It calls you for action, not just contemplation. Here's one interesting thing to note based on my clinical experience as well as others who have wrote about this, that most people would prefer to feel guilt than to feel helpless, especially after a traumatic event. Dr. David Spiegel notes that the essence of trauma is the loss of agency. Trauma victims often blame themselves to gain a sense of control. So ask yourself, when you think back of a significant negative incident, do you feel inadequate or do you feel you've done something wrong? You might say both. You might feel both shame and guilt. Inadequacy typically speaks of shame, and doing something wrong typically relates to guilt. The key is to figure out specific things you can do about it instead of wallowing and hiding in shame. Here's a classical example that many parents are familiar with. After a long day at work, you come home to a messy kitchen and screaming kids. You exploded at your children. You might naturally feel shame, a sense of being scary or becoming a bad parent. It makes you want to withdraw or want to hide. And at this moment, all you're feeling is, oh my goodness, I'm just like my own father, whom you swear not to become. To deal with this constructively, you can learn to convert that shame into guilt by making a repair. Instead of going into shutdown mode, you can open up a conversation by saying, I'm so sorry I yelled. That was scary, and it wasn't your fault. I'm actually super tired and my fuse is short. Even though it was quite a ruckus, I shouldn't have scared you with my loud voice. I'm so sorry. This shifts the focus from your so-called bad character to your responsible behavior, where you take the mantle of responsibility by listening to what guilt is calling you out for, to make amends. Here's a corollary to what we just discussed about guilt, because we need to question if guilt is actually warranted in specific instances. If it isn't, it might actually be false guilt. False guilt causes you to take responsibility for others' needs, which prevents them from learning to handle their own problems. In my clinical practice, I've also noticed that some people feel what we call an undeserved advantage when someone feels overly rewarded or at a better place than other people, causing them to feel sort of guilty, even if they didn't do anything to cause that inequity. Sometimes it may hint at shame. And here are three examples of them. The first one is the parental homework substitution. So a parent who feels guilty about being too busy or scary during a previous outburst might attempt to make amends by doing their children's difficult school project for them or giving them rewards or gifts unnecessarily when it's not warranted for. Well, this eases the parent's guilt. It prevents the child from learning to handle academic frustration and distress tolerance. Stopping this behavior involves acknowledging the parents' own feelings of guilt separately from the child's need to complete their own work. The second kind is the conflict-avoidant colleague. A person might take on a co-worker's workload because they feel a free-floating guilt or an unrealistic expectation that they must always be helpful in order to be liked by others. This enables the co-worker to remain dependent and avoid their own professional responsibilities. Stopping this involves tolerating the discomfort of the other person being displeased in order to protect one's own boundaries and allow the colleague to learn self-management. The third kind is the addiction shielding relative. A family member might pay off the debts of a relative struggling with addiction to prevent them from hitting rock bottom. And this is often motivated by survivor's guilt or a misplaced sense of communal responsibility. This effectively encourages the individual to avoid their own responsibilities. Recognizing the genuine repair involves the individual facing the damage they have caused, which allows the relative to stop enabling and instead encourage the individual to seek their own path to recovery. You can only take full responsibility for what is yours. So take a moment and ask yourself, is guilt warranted here when you are experiencing guilt? That is the difference between true guilt versus false guilt. Another thing to watch out for when one experiences guilt is watch out for self-punishment. Self-flagellation might actually be a substitute for true reparation. It is a form of psychological defense. It's self-destructive in its tendencies. It often comes from a self-criticalness as well. Self-punishment can perpetuate a sense of ongoing, perpetual guilt feeling. And this may not be productive. This is when we may need to look further into things that require special attention. And this is where you could seek professional help, somebody to help you in therapy. And if this section is relevant to you, I highly recommend for you to listen to the section on forgiveness in this home kit. The third component about guilt is when you take on the responsibility. So if guilt is a signal and not a noise, so this is when it's true guilt, take on the responsibility by making amends. True guilt, not false guilt, is a signal that propels us to take on the responsibility. After all, true guilt's signal is coming from the insight that says, I've done something wrong. Get good at repair. Restore broken relationships. Listen to the section about difficult conversations and expressing love in HomeKit. If there was indeed a wrong action on your part, make a promise to yourself to learn and improve on them. Make a promise to yourself and keep them, because this is the pathway to an ethical life. If the person you've harmed in the past is no longer around, find a way to make an active sacrifice or repair through a different act of service. This is a form of atonement. Atonement means to become one, to make one again, to make it right. And you can listen to the section on forgiveness for more about this. And for those who feel an undeserved advantage, you have a responsibility to use your advantage to make the world a slightly better place for others. Now that we've looked at those three strategies to deal with guilt, let's look at the reasons behind them. Here's why. Number one, turn shame to guilt. If shame is a story of hiding, guilt is a story of fault. So the process of turning shame to guilt is that guilt is responsibility based, whereas shame is inadequacy focused. Let's go under the hood and look at the various kinds of guilt that people can experience. And there are six of them. Number one, negligent guilt. It's behaving negligently, falling asleep on patrol, or not doing enough or let more off in a situation. The two underlying assumptions that you are capable of doing more and thus you should have done more. That's the negligent kind of guilt. The second one is superhuman and overestimation of control kind of guilt. Believing that you can control uncontrollable physiological responses, like your body's physical responses, freezing versus fighting, for example. Underneath this kind of guilt is a belief that you should have been able to make everything right and save the day. The third kind of guilt is the pleasure guilt. Some people describe feeling betrayed by their own body, doing something that is at odds with one's morality and feeling a rush from it. Another example of this kind of guilt is common in sexual assault survivors when certain parts of our bodies are stimulated when we feel aroused and or pleasurable, whether we like it or not. This can produce a lot of confusion and shame. Number four is a kind of survivor's guilt when someone else died while you came out unscathed in an accident, for example. The fifth is self-blame. Because it's easier to maintain a relationship with someone if we don't perceive them as a perpetrator, but instead blame ourselves for the assault. And finally, the sixth, innocent bystander guilt. Guilt of witnessing something terrible happen and not doing anything. Converting shame into guilt is considered a vital therapeutic move because it shifts a person from a state of paralysis and hiding to one of conscience and action. While shame targets the entire self and leads to withdrawal, guilt targets specific actions and motivates repair. This shifts the focus from being to doing. Number two, questioning if the guilt is warranted. This is the main thing, making a distinction between true guilt and false guilt, because false guilt is potent and goes nowhere. We just end up becoming self-critical and self-punishing, as we described earlier. And finally, the third one is to take on the responsibility. If our lives were in three acts, the first act would be freedom. The second, responsibility. And the third is adventure. When we fail to take on the mantle of responsibility, maybe even choose to overstay in the land of freedom, we will not be able to see the adventure that awaits for us. Now, to be clear, taking on responsibility for what you have done wrong and for the direction of where your life is heading towards can cause anxiety, and difficult choices are there for you to make and may even cause suffering and exact some kinds of sacrifices on your part. In an essay that I wrote called The Arc of Life, most of us would be familiar with the image of the Statue of Liberty, a gift from France to America in 1886. Commemorating the two nations' friendship and shared love of freedom. But have you ever noticed that she isn't standing still? The statue's right foot is actually lifted, as if in mid-stride, as if to say, liberty is on the move. Paradoxically, as noted by the German psychoanalyst Erich Fromm, the fear of freedom can sometimes grip a hold on us. Nevertheless, we're invited to exercise our freedom for play, freedom to explore and discover the world within and without. As we come of age and reckon with the freedom at our disposal, we enter into a new phase. At this arc of the journey, we begin to comprehend that liberty begets responsibility. With the choices that we make willingly, we learn that the territory of responsibility comes sacrifices. You can't have it all. You can pursue anything you want, but not everything. Freedom asks for the partnership of responsibility. This means to take on the obligations of self-control and regard for other people. When we think about these two phases of freedom and responsibility, the author Ryan Holiday incisively pointed out, we don't have a freedom problem, we have a responsibility problem. What Ryan Holiday was referring to is that we have an overinflated value of freedom at the expense of responsibility. Responsibility is understanding yourself as belonging to something larger than yourself. Our responsibility is to see beyond just individual good, but common good of all, shifting the lens from I to we. Austrian psychiatrist and Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl said, "When we look upon human life without the blinkers of preconception, we must conclude that both consciousness and responsibleness play the basic roles in the drama of existence. Being human means being conscious and being responsible," says Frankl. Curiously, after 75 years, when the Statue of Liberty was inaugurated in New York Harbor on the East Coast, another statue was actually proposed to be erected on the West Coast. It was to be called the Statue of Responsibility, symbolizing the flip side of America's prized virtue. This was the brainchild of Viktor Frankl. He said, "Freedom, however, is not the last word. Freedom is only part of the story and half of the truth. Freedom is but the negative aspect of the whole phenomenon, whose positive aspect is responsibleness. In fact, freedom is in danger of degenerating into mere arbitrariness unless it is lived in terms of responsibleness." This is why, Frankl says, "I recommend that the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast be supplemented by the Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast." Why am I mentioning all this about freedom and responsibility? Because when we can take responsibility for the things that are of true guilt, then we can turn things around. In closing, guilt is a sign of your love, a deeper part of yourself that is calling out to you to come home, to heal, and to be at home. To love well with those you love. Do not attach to false guilt, as it keeps you prisoner in your own body. When it is true guilt, it is an invitation to repair. To repair is to heal. Our hearts long for healing.